Broadcasting from Manhattan Beach and the World Wide Web, you're listening to CHSR, HealthyLife.net.
As a service to our listeners, this program is for general information and entertainment purposes only. CHSR HealthyLife.net does not recommend, endorse, or object to the views, products, or topics expressed or discussed by show hosts or their guests. We suggest you always consult with your own personal, medical, financial, or legal advisor.
Hi, folks. This is Autism with Dr. Andy, and today's guest, Yana Kaufman, is a yoga instructor and owns her own yoga institute and works with all kinds of children, and especially kids who are challenged. And I'm delighted to have her with me because she was here once before, and she's a great interview. So welcome, Yana.
Thank you.
So, Yana, let's start off by telling us about yourself. What did you do before you got into doing what you're doing, and what kind of moved you in that direction?
Oh, certainly. I am a licensed pediatric physical therapist, and I have been working with children for over 20 years. The yoga therapy certification and yoga teaching certification came later in my career, and I have been marrying the two worlds of yoga therapy and physical therapy, working with children for almost 10 years now, full time. The work has brought me to the opportunities where I'm able to intertwine physical movement in space with the mindfulness and the meditation practices of the mind and connecting body in a physical sense with the meditative mind practices while working with children with a variety of needs and diagnoses, as well as neurotypical children who are developing and hitting milestones in timely manner.
Yeah. Yana, what was the driving force in getting you first involved in physical therapy?
I have always been working and spending time with children. I've always gravitated toward children and wanted to be a teacher. I think it takes a special person to want to work with children and be guiding them. And it takes a very special person to be working with a child who has difficulty focusing and concentrating or has difficulty walking at age of five and is unable to see or move in the world without someone's assistance and therefore are limited in their independence and dependent on many, many milestones. So it is extraordinarily for me to be working with any child of any age, but I also find that what is even more fascinating is the ability of the brain of any human being in this world to have the neuroplasticity and the ability to develop further, which is very often beyond what we foresee from an outcome perspective, and that the brain is a malleable and extraordinary organ that we still are discovering and learning about. Knowing the ultimate and the infinite potential of the brain is what is most exciting from a neurointegrative perspective, working with children for me.
Yeah, you've intrigued me here with your last comment. The ability of the brain to change and to be able to make accommodations for a wide variety of issues. Tell me what, give me an example of that. You know, someone that you've worked with where you said they came in with X issues and after a while things happened that that was no longer the case or changed in some way.
What comes to mind immediately is a case story of a boy who was adopted at age of 2.5 from an orphanage. And when I met him, and he just arrived a week before in the USA. This is many years ago. He, at 2.5, was not walking. He was not talking. He has never had a bath or immersed in the water. He's never been outdoors. Therefore, the nervous system of that little boy was severely deprived. Sensory experiences that a human body experiences at birth through up 2.5 years of age is extraordinary, and he was severely, significantly deprived of many sensory and nurturing experiences. Working with that boy was not just about to teach him how to walk. He knew how to stand, so he was like a 10-month-old boy who could stand upright, but he did not have the ability to walk. As a physical therapist, I'm trained to work on gait training and teaching this boy to walk, run, and jump by 2.5 and being able to go up and down the steps. But what I wanted so much more was so beyond the typical ability to walk. I wanted this boy to be nurtured from the yogic perspective and teaching and educating the parent in teaching and treating the body as a whole. And therefore, we needed to answer the work, introduce the work into that boy via touch, via tactile input, way before we introduced any yoga postures or demands on how to move through space, because this boy was not willing or wanted that input, or touch was aversive. And so it wasn't just about hugs, it was how to introduce, you know, just being touched at a toe or at a foot level, what amount of touch, how much of input. And so the work becomes so much more less is more and not so more than less. And then it is approached from the perspective of honor and respect to this little human being who has been through so much, and that honor and respect without any expectations is very Eastern philosophy. It's very yogic. I don't come with an expectation that you're going to do X, Y, and Z. And I don't come in with goals and objectives as a licensed physical therapist. What I do is I approach this boy each and every time whenever I've worked with him from the point of love and devotion, and also feeling that I don't know what it's like, and that utmost respect when you have the emotional piece as an adult who is bigger and taller and knows so much more, being so humbled is what makes such a profound difference in my work. And I believe that any person who works with a child, if one can shift in that perspective and in that direction, having that almost white blank canvas each and every time when they work with the child, will bring so much more in terms of rewards, where the person, that little boy, needs to develop trust and bond with you, which for that boy took longer than maybe for a child who comes from an intact family who has needs such as difficulty communicating and has autism or has a diagnosis of ADHD and is hyperactive and can't stop moving but has a high IQ and has been given love and was held as an infant. So it's a very different upbringing, but yet the approach is still the same, coming from the point of being humble and in a sense waiting for that surrender before you can start impacting in a greater way. And that takes a lot of patience from the therapist, such as me. And knowing that less is more will give me so much more in return, because when the child bonds and begins to trust you, you can then bring more expectations without them feeling being overloaded or overburdened with a demand. And so they can give you more in return in terms of the outcomes, where they feel empowered, and that's the key essence of the work.
This is wonderful. Yana, I just want to make sure I get it right. Was this child adopted?
The first child that I spoke about is the child who was adopted and came to me, to the United States, from living in an orphanage for two, a little bit over the 2 years of age. But you know, I see children in my practice that come from intact families that were born and raised, you know, and were nurtured in so many beautiful ways that the intact biological parents provide to their child. And so, you know, certain markers come from the biological or genetic predispositions, and so the diagnoses vary. But the initial one was the child was adopted and had global developmental delays upon arrival.
Yeah. You know, as you were speaking, you reminded me of a friend, I've become friendly in the last few years, with a lady by the name of Elaine Hall. And I don't know if you've ever heard of her, but she developed something called the Miracle Project. And what reminds me of, in your work, of what she's doing, and for our listeners to let them know, because you touched on something very important. Elaine adopted a little boy from, I think Russia, but I could be wrong. But when he came, and it was just a year or two, she found out he was autistic. And it worked out that he was severely autistic, and she ended up getting divorced because of it. The husband left. But what I like about what you said, and similar to Elaine Hall, who is now world famous, is her son decided that she developed her own way of getting to his needs. And she was a AAA rated child coach, actor coach. She would coach children for the movies and TV. And when you said something earlier, when I don't expect anything, when I just get into his world and I get him to trust me, that's when it all begins. And boy, it's almost word for word what she said, because she developed something called the Miracle Project, and she has kids on the spectrum now all over the world, learning how to sing and dance and be in plays, which would seem totally, not possible for kids on the spectrum, but she does it. And I just had to mention it, Deanna, because I think at the root of all great people like yourself and like Elaine Hall, that is this understanding of, and you mentioned this word, surrender. That you're going to let, you don't have your goals and objectives, but rather surrender and then go with where they are and bring them along. Am I correct in this?
Yeah, surrender and go with the flow is, you know, very easy to articulate for us at any age, truly. But if one listens to the essence of it, when and how often do we really let go, truly let go? And yoga as a modality teaches a physical and a mind, a physical body and a mind, but in a human being, an adult or child, when you come to the yoga mat, when I sit down to practice yoga in a group class or in my own personal practice, I am to close my eyes and to let go. I am to approach the yoga mat each time I practice on any given day or several times a day as a beginner. I am to close my eyes and go inwards and have no expectations and feel free to flow in a sense, breathing and movement patterns each time without expecting anything and letting be. And that is really, truly difficult to do for all of us. Intellectually, the mind takes over, and we call it a monkey mind. Now, as a therapist, I am to have goals and objectives when I approach a student, or I am to develop goals and objectives. And those are the expectations that are then being imposed in a nonverbal manner or in a verbal, or feeling the pressure of a parent having an outcome. Therefore, it becomes critical for me when I work with the child to be so mindful myself by practicing yoga daily so that I remain in that maintenance ability, that I'm able to shift there each and every time as a human being. Therefore, the sessions then can be that much more powerful because the child feels that. There's no need to speak about it. One can articulate and explain that to the parent, But with a child, it is perceived so rapidly by all children right away, whether they can speak or not. They feel the love and they feel the level of expectations, and so often they just shut off because they feel that what you want from them is too hard. It's just too difficult. And I rather act out, or I misbehave, or I run away, or I don't want to listen, whatever it is. But when you let the child be free with an expectation and allow and give them that white canvas that they can draw upon in a sense of movement, it becomes much more powerful. So it's no surprise that Elaine is able to optimize and share this work, because I think it is the only way to reach out to a child who has difficulty reaching out outward, either in a physical sense or in emotional or in the conversational. I hope that answers the or validates what you had mentioned.
Yeah, you're clicking off in my mind so many interesting concepts as you're talking, and what just popped up was that, you know, many kids with applied behavior analysis, when they're asked to say, you know, something over and over until they get it right, that I've heard in many cases where the kids just get so frustrated they don't want to do it anymore. And when you said that the kids, sometimes they perceive that this is too hard and I just don't want to do it, and that, I think that's one of the criticisms of ABA, that, well, first, it can be very boring, and second, that the kids, and I've heard this more than once, and I'm not putting down ABA in any way, but just saying that so many times they get frustrated because they know demands are being put on them and they just want to get away. Would you agree with that?
Absolutely. The intelligence and the learned behavior in all of us as humans is very powerful. We know what's good for us, and I'm not talking about lazy patterns. We know what is safe. Because one time when you experience the lack of safety with that person by being pushed over the limits unreasonably or without, now it is not to say that we are not to encourage and hope for a better outcome each and every time. And the analogy I would provide is the following. We have all experienced, hopefully once in our lifetime, having been privileged to be taught by a teacher, perhaps in the elementary school or in a preschool, or in high school or in college. There was at least one teacher in our lives that has guided us in a group or in a private way without imposing or demanding. That teacher had inspired you to go to your optimal, to be your best, inspired you to read more or to write more or to dream more or to find the best of your abilities, the gifts that you may have not known you had. But that teacher did it in a form and in a way that was so gentle and delicious and without an expectation or a demand. But you wanted to provide and deliver back for him or for her. That is the most special teaching that is out there. And those gifted teachers are able to shift their students without ever demanding or expecting, but just by guiding them and taking the best and bringing it to the surface and having them fly to their ultimate potential. So to me, that is that same essence that I want to bring to the session each and every time. To guide a child without an expectation and being imposed with do this, do that. ABA goes hand in hand with that. I'm also not against the FI behavioral analysis. I think it has a lot of beauty, but it is not to be used one and only modality. I think there are certain essences of it, but it is done in such a way that one encourages a higher level of a behavior or an expectation without a demand, where the child wants to please you so much without you ever expecting it. They just do it. And that is the most beautiful way of teaching, I think. And that guidance is what yoga has brought out in me, in my teachings. it became apparent that one must guide, not demand. One must guide each and every time, feeling very much of knowing the skill that you want to pull out of that child, always wanting more. I always want more. I'm always hungry for more from that child. Is it ever enough? You know, we're always learning, so it's never enough, I suppose. But it is the effort you want the most out of them, and they need to want to do it just as well. And the desire intrinsically is what is key here. You want them to develop that intrinsic motivation. And I'm telling you, it is possible. It is miraculous to see these changes in the students. And when they happen, you know you're doing the right thing. You don't need to question because the outcomes are right before your eyes.
You know, Yana, and our listeners, I've talked to Yana about writing a book because I find her work so fascinating. And I did think one of your chapters in your book, Yana, should be One Must Guide, Not Demand. Now, that's a chapter.
All right. I am actually in the process of that.
Another great chapter is Always Want More.
I have a whole story on that.
And another great chapter would be The Power of Surrender.
Well, I have to say, Dr. Andy, you're really getting the essence of me. I can tell you a very quick story of a 12-year-old boy on the spectrum who would look at into my face and would say, "It's never enough for you, isn't it? You always want more." And he would say it in that intonation.
Wow.
With the power of stating that I surrender to you as my teacher. I bow to you in those words because I believe and trust that you guide me and push me to the point where I can reach, but you're not going to do it to the point where I fail. And I inspire to do more for you each and every time. So thank you for validating that.
Wow, isn't that wonderful? Yana, we have to take a short commercial break. Folks, we'll be right back with Yana Kaufman, master teacher, and a great interview. We'll be right back.
Are you a parent of a child on the autism spectrum? Maybe you lead a classroom that includes students with autism, or perhaps you have a friend with ASD and would just like to know more. At AAPCpublishing.com, you'll find books that will help your child cope with stress in those high anxiety moments, teaching models that help you be more effective in the classroom, and fun games and activities that teach children the necessary social skills to build stronger relationships. AAPCpublishing.com, AAPC, formerly known as the Autism and Asperger Publishing Company, is the best resource for practical solutions to ASD. If you're looking to learn more about sensory issues, applied behavior analysis, or just how to prepare your child for high school or college, visit AAPCpublishing.com. Mention the promotional code ANDY, and customers will receive a 10% discount at AAPCpublishing.com now.
Hi, folks. This is Autism with Dr. Andy. Today's guest, Yana Kaufman, is a yoga teacher, a physical therapist, and a wonderful interview. So welcome back, Yana.
Thank you for having me.
So where we left off, you were talking about a young boy who was realizing that you were helping him to go in the right direction but not forcing him. And as a result, he found the motivation to want to do more and more. Did I have that correct?
Yes. Well, I guess we could define that as an intrinsic motivation that a human mind has and possesses. And the key for a gifted teacher is to discover and point that out to her students. And for me, it is one of the key points that you want to reach, whether it's a 12-month-old infant or a 10-year-old boy or 21 for that matter, it's really the age becomes irrelevant here because the intrinsic motivation is available to all of us. And how to reach that point where the child wants to do certain postures or breathing or moving through space willingly and enjoy it and recognize its value is very powerful indeed, especially for a child with special needs where working against gravity and moving through space is just simply difficult.
You know, when we started off today, you mentioned that I always wanted to be a teacher, became a physical therapist, became a yoga instructor. But what's coming across to me, Anna, is more than anything else, you are a teacher who has taken Eastern philosophy and incorporated it into Western education, because this is not typically the way we think in the West. And yet, as a matter of fact, you're reminding me of Alan Watts. Do you know, have you ever heard of Alan Watts?
What is the last name?
Alan Watts, W-A-T-T-S. And he was a psychologist back in the 50s and 60s, very world famous, but was the first to combine Western psychology with Eastern mysticism. And he's one of my favorite philosophers because a lot of what you're saying is in some ways similar to him. And what I like about it, it's a kinder, more compassionate, more loving, more interesting way of doing things. And so that instead of, you know, hitting somebody over the head with a stick to get them to learn something, what you're doing is using, as you mentioned, you're motivating their intrinsic motivation, getting that inner drive to do something that's there by stimulating it. And I think how you're stimulating it is with unconditional love and acceptance. Would you agree with that?
Yes, unconditional love is one key word, and acceptance with the letter A as a cap, you know, as a beginning of the alphabet, it is the secret sauce of the work of mine every day, and it comes naturally to me, and it has always been part of who I am, and therefore it's never been a burden to approach any child with that love and devotion and acceptance. It is, I think, the only way to take and teach and guide the child with the most benefits for them and them feeling that they're good enough. That they're good enough now, right now, right in this moment. That I don't judge them. The lack of judgment that yoga and many, many other philosophers or philosophies preach and teach is not something that is directly part of necessarily therapeutic model per se. But it is, I think, a must for anyone who works with children. And that acceptance is critical in guiding the child and developing trust and bond with them first and foremost so that you can inspire and encourage them to do the most of learning.
You know, you're mentioning so many interesting things, and what I'm picking up here is that with children on the spectrum, and you mentioned it earlier, because they are very sensitive, even though they may not appear to be so, but when they pick up that they're a disappointment or that, as you mentioned before, they're not good enough, and they do pick that up, that you could see how that would make them want to just give up and not try. And so, you know, I'm really kind of validating your approach and enjoying it.
Well, at the end of the day, we're all primitive beings. And my work is deeply rooted in understanding the primitive behavior. I do have a biology undergrad and wanted to go into being a physician. So learning about the body from the physiological perspective, not just from the psychological perspective, is critical for my work. understanding the primitive human needs are critical here, because we're all needing to be safe and secure and stable. And the word acceptance and that you're good enough comes from, if the child feels threatened by the demand of your presence, just your presence, in a nonverbal manner, you don't need to say anything. It is your nonverbal presence that dictates many things, especially for children on the spectrum. They're already threatened. Some of them are born into this world with their nervous system in the flight or fright. So to present as a teacher and take them further into that is not healthy and certainly not therapeutic. My goal is to help their nervous system to feel secure and stable and steady, because that is where we're willing and are able to learn. We learn when we feel safe. We are unable to learn when we're running from a tiger in a primitive sense, because at that point, all the blood physiologically rushes into the muscle tissue so that you have the ability to run fast, to escape. And therefore, that is very important to appreciate for those who work with children with special needs, and to educate the parent to understand where this neurointegrative piece comes into. And the neurointegrative work and the body work that's required for the body to unwind and settle, if it's a 5-year-old or 10-year-old, it's easier when the child is younger. It's much easier to work on a nervous system when it's an infant. It has not developed compensatory patterns that a 10- or 12-year-old has.
Yeah, you know, you're. I have always been interested in horse psychology, and watching horses and how they interact with each other, and you know, as you know, they have their own language, as all animals do. And I had the good fortune of meeting a very interesting lady I want to tell you about. Before I do, though, have you ever heard of Barbara Brennan, the woman who wrote Hands of Light?
Mm-hmm. And I'm also thinking about a movie, Bach movie, about a gentleman who worked with horses, and his approach was very similar.
Right. Well, I had met the lady, actually, who was Barbara Brennan's teacher. Her name was Rosalind Bruyere, and she's an energy healer type person. And I met her at a conference in Long Island and said to her, because I've been working with kids on the spectrum for a long time, I said, why is it that so many kids on the spectrum, especially the lower functioning ones, why is it that they many times, not all the time, but many times seem to get along well with horses? They seem to have a natural affinity with some of them. And she gave me the most interesting answer I wanted to just get your opinion on. What it was is, she says that the aura or the electromagnetic field that the horse gives off is similar in some ways to what the field that the child is giving off. And the horse thinks that the kid is a horse, and the kid thinks that the horse is like them, and there's a natural acceptance. Have you ever heard anything like that?
Yes, and I deeply, deeply believe that already. And, you know, if you think about it, there's no analytical perspective here that the horse provides to the child, and the child doesn't analyze either. It is just there.
Yeah, so fascinating. Yana, we have to take a short commercial break, and we'll be right back, and I'd like to continue this wonderful conversation. So 1 minute, folks, and we'll be back with you.
Are you a parent of a child on the autism spectrum? Maybe you lead a classroom that includes students with autism, or perhaps you have a friend with ASD and would just like to know more. At AAPCpublishing.com, you'll find books that will help your child cope with stress in those high anxiety moments, teaching models that
help you be more effective in the classroom, and fun games and activities that teach children the necessary social skills to build stronger relationships. AAPCPublishing.com, AAPC, formerly known as the Autism and Asperger Publishing Company, is the best resource for practical solutions to ASD. If you're looking to learn more about sensory issues, applied behavior analysis, or just how to prepare your child for high school or college, visit AAPCPublishing.com. Mention the promotional code ANDY, and customers will receive a 10% discount at AAPCPublishing.com now.
Where positive people and radio unite. HealthyLife.net.
Hi, folks. This is Autism with Dr. Andy, and today's guest, Yana Kaufman, is a teacher, physical therapist, and a master yoga teacher. Welcome back, Yana.
Thank you so much.
Yana, I'm interested in especially in light of the conversation we had just prior to the commercial, and I was mentioning about the aura. We all give off an electromagnetic field, and, you know, you kind of agreed with the my thoughts about horses and kids on the spectrum, and I'm wondering also if, as a result of your work in yoga or with yoga, that it's changed your electromagnetic field so that you're not the person you were before you started all this. Give me a thought on that.
Fascinating question. Thank you for taking me into that thought process. That I am often thinking and aware and observing as an observer. It has definitely shifted, and I like the word shift, not change. The shifts are pretty profound. What is unique is that they are happening simultaneously in a correlated patterns over time. And when one is doing the work on a daily basis, treating children and practicing yoga, you know, there's the duality. When am I a student? When am I a teacher? Is commonly in front of me as a question, if you will. The quieter my mind becomes, the more optimized in a faster, meaningful manner I'm able to get children go through their journeys. And the quieting the mind of myself each and every time before the session or during my personal yoga practice, shifting the peacefulness and the meditative sense where I can sit for 45 to an hour and a half quietly without the mind having to run through tasks and lists in a dynamic way that I do in a business model is very profound, because that is correlated to my ability to approach the child and quiet it so much faster. It's very powerful when one realizes the sheer power of it, and the power in a good way, in a happy way, in a healthy way. And then talking to children about it during the sessions or as part of their journey, educating them very gently and slowly and gradually so that they can shift and experience the quietness and the silence. I talk about the word silence all the time with the students, and I promote that in the environment where we practice as a center, and we promote that towards others. For quieting and going inward into the body, into the mind, is not something we Westerners are taught in the schools or in homes necessarily, and that is ability that I think is very powerful to learn as a skill. It's very healthy. one becomes superiorly productive with their everyday tasks if one can learn that. So the correlation is profound, and it is a very enjoyable one. It brings me a lot of joy to feel the shift, and therefore it intrinsically motivates me to be doing more in my own personal yoga practice to be better as a teacher and as a therapist to my clients and all the other roles I fulfill outside of the center.
Anna, I'm thinking about our teachers out there, and many of the people listening will be teachers. And could you give them some suggestions that before they start their day, that they could go through in their mind so that, if I may give you an example, I teach teachers to work with autistic kids and also with kids who have behavioral or emotional issues. And just as an example, one of the things I teach them is that your room is what I call your sacred space. So that when you come in that room, you make sure you treat it almost as if you were in a church or a synagogue or a mosque. It's sacred. And that when someone comes to the door, they just don't barge in, but they knock and ask permission. And that you speak in always in a respectful voice and that kind of thing. And that when you look at it that way, things change. And I think that's also what you're saying in your school, that your practice area becomes a sacred space. Would I be correct? Am I correct? Am I getting that right?
It is very, very correct. And the word sacred, womb-like environment is what I discuss during the workshops with parents and professionals every day. It is not just the space in the physical essence of it with colors from a visual perspective. It is also the lighting, not to be fluorescent, but rather incandescent. It's soft and gentle in yellow tones. It is the balance of the furniture or decreased amount of it. It is lack of clutter in a physical sense and in a visual sense, all to promote serenity and symmetry and quietness for the mind. It is the auditory, which is the sound, which is the voice, which is how loud you speak as a group, as a community, or as a single person. It is conveyed through nonverbal and verbal as we educate the families upon entering the environment. It is the smell of a certain candle, perfume, incense. It's very subtle. It's very gentle. It's the same. I don't encourage the staff to wear perfume. I don't need to ask. I think it becomes a common sense for those people that work here, but it is something that all of us can be aware of. It is the mindfulness awareness of the touch, how fast or how rapid you move through the space. And so all the senses are being gently settled in the environmental sense, you know, soft music, spa-like in the background. People speak softly even if there are no doors, and one can portray and modulate the voice very loud if they have to, or they can soften it, and you could still hear me, and so forth and so on. The environment becomes the sacred space if one wants to make it, and you don't need to change the entire room in the house. Many parents would ask me that question. I find that anchoring a small table at a floor level, making that a spot, I call it an anchor in Eastern philosophies and in a religious perspective, it's called an altar. But I believe that a simple, small level desk where one can sit on the floor, and if you needed to, you know, for example, place a candle or a favorite object on that table, is good enough. And then perhaps a yoga mat or a blanket nearby. Being towards the corner or towards the wall is grounding. All that we're discussing is about settling and grounding. We feel most secure as a human body when we're at a floor level. And it doesn't have to be a harsh hardwood floor or carpet if one is not used to being on that surface. It could be soft, comfortable blanket. But being settled and ground, all of my work is done at a floor level. It is so much more grounding for the physical body, and we feel safer. Let's see, what else? So we've touched upon the senses. We've touched about the soft modulation and sustaining it there. And then facilitating and modulating any kind of noise levels one can. My center is located 2 miles away from the hospital, so we have often ambulances or police drive by the main street. But somehow the children are able to, in time, tune that noise out, and you have no control over the noises. You can only control what you can in the space that you're in. But some parents go to the extent of maybe blocking providing around the windows to produce to decrease the noise level. All of these strategies help the body and the mind to go inward more. Darker lighting as well.
Mm-hmm. For teachers, if they had 10 minutes to prepare themselves for their next class, and we're going to answer this right after the commercial break, but the question would be, if they had 10 minutes before their class in the morning, and they could prepare themselves in some way, mentally, spiritually, or what I'm saying, when we come back after the commercial break, I'd like you to give them some advice on what they can do to center themselves to be in the place that they will be best able to serve their kids. So we'll be right back, folks, after this short break.
Fasten Your Seatbelt is Dr. Annie McCabe's new book, The Gifted One, takes you on the ride of your life. A positive, fulfilling life, that is, if you accept the challenge. You'll fulfill your dreams as The Gifted One shows you you can have a successful, productive, and happy life. Now, here's your chance to accept the challenge. Get your copy of The Gifted One today at Amazon.com or BarnesandNoble.com, Kindle, and Nook, or visit AndyCityBear.com. You'll be in for the greatest ride of your life. The Gifted One by Dr. Andy McCabe.
Radio your way. HealthyLife.net.
Hi, folks. This is Autism with Dr. Andy. Today's guest, Yana Kaufman, teacher, physical therapist, yoga instructor, master. Welcome back, Yana.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So when we left off, we were talking about some suggestions you could give teachers before they went to their class in the morning. They had 10 minutes where they could maybe sit by themselves and do a preparation mentally, spiritually, whatever. Any suggestions?
So what I would recommend, and I've worked with schools, in the schools, private charter, public schools for many, many years myself, I know how stressful those days are for our teachers. What I would recommend initially in the beginning of the day is not looking at the notes or the lesson plans of execution that are expected, but rather putting those aside, closing the classroom door, shutting off the lights, which most classrooms have access to, where you have the switches available to you, and maybe sitting at your desk if sitting on the floor on a rug is not available or it is difficult for one. But sitting at a chair or at a desk where perhaps access to the nature via window is available, irregardless of the weather, and closing eyes. But when the body settles in a chair or at a floor, one has to be really, truly comfortable. And I encourage sitting in such way as if you're in the movie theater, where you get very comfortable, or on your favorite couch in the evening after work hours, ready to watch your favorite show. Feet on the ground, back is supported, preferably with the back of the chair. and perhaps a flexion or forward bending pattern where maybe the chin settles down, arms and hands are supported or relaxed. And one goes into herself or himself, a settled relaxation, mental break, if one wants to call it, focusing and concentration where the body lets go and settles and quiets. So when one closes the eyes, even though it's morning time and one should be up and running, you're really preparing yourself mentally by letting go. By doing that, you need to close your eyes and tune into your breathing. And that is the key to relaxation. During the day at any time, it doesn't have to be morning, listening to one's breath by eyes, closing their eyes, maybe placing their hands on their belly, bringing the chin down, relaxing the tongue. In yoga, we encourage the tip of the tongue be at the top of the roof of the mouth, where the teeth and the jaw is close, but not in a stiff manner, but rather soft and relaxed. And just focusing on how rapid the breath is, and once assessed, slowing the breathing to a relaxed, deepened breathing. And it could be a minute or two. If you train yourself to do that when you are relaxed, you'll be able to do that when you become stressed, and you'll be able to entrain your brain to do it faster when you need it. But to do that every morning as a form of centering, using the breathing, decreasing the breathing in a form of going from hyperventilatory, where we're all stressed, to taking deep, maybe sigh, is all one needs to center themselves, whether you practice yoga on a daily basis or not.
Yeah, I like that very much. I like that very much. And I think it would make for a better day for most folks if they could just take a little time out between the worries and cares of their home and all going on in their life, and then just a little time out before they get to work with their students, where they can center. And I know myself, Jan, if I may just speak personally for a minute, that when I'm centered, I do much better. And if I'm angry in any way, I always mess it up. And I had a situation recently where I was off balance. I got angry. And I totally screwed up a situation that could have gone very, very nicely. But because I was out of balance and because I didn't take the time to get balanced, things didn't go the way I wanted them to. However, if I may, and this is also part of this, what we're talking about, I suggested to myself after it was all over that nothing was wasted because it was a learning situation. And what I learned was, don't do that again. And I learned that next time, spend more time before anything important making sure you're balanced. So regardless of what happens, you handle it in a more effective, positive way. So even our mistakes become stepping stones for success, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely. Of course. Every day is a learning curve, learning experience. Of course.
Yeah. We only have a few minutes left. And, you know, you have a richness of experience and knowledge that I'm trying to get everything out of you, which I know we can't. We don't have time. But some more suggestions for our teachers at home, in their personal life, in school. Just whatever random thoughts come to your head, I'd appreciate.
I find grounding the feet throughout the day at a desk level is very critical. We often sit with our feet not necessarily fully weight-bearing on the ground, on the earth. So when one feels out of balance, emotionally, mentally, or feeling stressed, pressing the feet or stomping the feet, if that is available to you, is actually very grounding. Intentionally stomping with the rhythm of one foot or both. And I also find that being aware of your sit bones on the chair, in the car, during the commute, or at a floor level if that's where your work provides you with, one can ground themselves more securely, and tapping into the breathing. It is one important activity that humans forget to do. We breathe to be alive, to stay alive, but the conscious breath is the key essence of yoga. And while you don't need to be practicing yoga every day, all day, if that is something that you don't enjoy or is not available to you, simply focusing and observing your breath and then regulating it from over exhalation or rapid breathing to slowing it down and using the diaphragmatic, which is your belly breathing, one can settle their well-being very easily without a formal training of being a yoga teacher. So breathing is really the key for centering and for feeling peaceful.
Anna, before I forget, and I should have done this earlier, tell our listeners how they can get in touch with you.
So we are located in Morristown, New Jersey, and our website is thewholechildnj.com, thewholechildnj.com, and we can be reached at 973-998-8700. It's 973-998-8700.
Let me do that again. That was thewholechildnj.com, correct?
Correct.
And let's give your phone number once more to our listeners.
973-998-8700.
Yana, I want to thank you for a delightful interview. This is the second time Yana's been on my show. And every time it's just a wonderful experience for me, and I always take away lots of good thoughts. And I'm teaching a class today, and I'm going to talk about you and have them listen to the show and write up a two-page paper about what you had to say. So when I get those papers and grade them, I'll send you copies.
Well, I truly enjoyed our conversation and our chat, and I hope the listeners have enjoyed it as well, and I'm accessible and available for any questions at any time. Feel free to email or call us.
Okay, folks, before we
sign off,
that's thewholechildnj.com. Thank you, Yana Kaufman. See you next week, folks.
Thank you so much for having me on your show.
Thank you.